Welcome to the Valor Podcast. I'm Nick Lehman. We want to thank you for subscribing and listening to the show. We're very excited with this journey, and we want to give a shout out to our sponsor, the Comfort Inn Suites in Gallup, New Mexico. They are really great to us. They host us, and we've done a couple episodes out there, and they're just really great people. Their lobby is very military filled with history and things of that. So if you're ever traveling through Gallup, stop there, and you'll be treated to some amazing historical things that are around the office. So today we're going to talk about a nonprofit organization called TAPS. That's the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. It offers compassionate care for all those grieving the death of a loved one serving in our armed forces. Since 1994, TAPS has provided comfort and hope 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, through the National Peer Support Network and Connection to Grief Resource, all at no cost for surviving families and loved ones. Many supporters of this program have been top-level CEOs from Fortune 500 companies to a few past United States presidents. We are joined by Audrey Bolgoldsdyke, a Navy veteran and a Navy widow that joined TAPS in 1997. She currently serves as a survivor care team manager overseeing a department providing peer support and national outreach. Thanks for joining us, Audrey.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about how you got involved with TAPS.
I came to TAPS in 1997 on March 8th, which was 3 days after my husband went missing from his ship in the Pacific Ocean. He was on the USS Kincaid. And I called TAPS when I was at a low point where I was in shock and didn't know what to do. I picked up the phone. My casualty officer had given me a brochure outlining what TAPS was all about, and it seemed like the place I needed to go to for support in that moment. So I picked up the phone and wound up on that day getting in touch with our founder, Bonnie Carroll, who wound up being the first person who could really understand what my loss was all about. She wound up walking with me, especially in the first 2 years, which was just full of ups and downs, very much a roller coaster. She wound up walking through that time with me and providing support in a way that only another survivor who had become a military widow as well could really identify with. So, I came at that time as a survivor and was a supporter for many years and ultimately wound up coming on staff as a way, in part, to make sense out of my own husband's death and to use it for good so that I could, even in his death, be partnered with him to continue making a difference in the life of people. It's what made sense to me to be able to use that and to pay it forward. What I received from Bonnie Carroll at that time in 97 is something that I just strive every single day to give back to survivors who are coming behind me and experiencing their own losses.
Well, that's an amazing story. Thank you for your service for our country in the Navy and for continuing on your husband's legacy. I mean, military personnel, we see them go in and we don't know the end outcome. Some of them retire, some of them come back injured, and some of them, pay the ultimate sacrifice, if you will. And so I was looking at the organization, and the thing that really struck me was that you have a hotline that's 24/7, and you never can put a time stamp on when things like this will happen. So that's pretty great to have an organization that has a staff that's on 24/7. Can you tell me a little bit how that works and what's the earliest someone has called? I know it probably has been at 3 a.m.
We receive calls at various hours all through the night, every day of the week, every day of the year. Calls on Christmas Day when other people are with their families and survivors are struggling to make it through the day. Some survivors who call and it's literally minute by minute just breathing through that moment to get through it. And for all sorts of resources that people are searching for, whether it's, grief support or, struggling with other issues related to the loss. We are just there to answer that call no matter what time of day it is. So the helpline is staffed by other survivors who are years out from their losses and who are, like me, wanting to use their experience as a survivor to help other people who wind up calling in needing that same type of support. The helpline itself is a great resource for survivors because it's ground zero for connecting them to every single program that we have within TAPS to get them the assistance that they need.
That's great. And then tell a little bit about, just briefly overview, what kind of programs are available? I know I was looking on the website and there's tons of things that people, you know, that maybe you're an introvert can get connected and then people who are extroverts can get connected with.
Absolutely. We like to say that no matter where you are in your grief journey, there is something for you at TAPS, and that is absolutely true. From the moment people first connect with us, we try to make sure that we put the materials in their hands to let them know all of the various options. So we have a very active casework department who they help families who are having issues related to benefits or other things that are related to the loss, whether it's, burial questions, funeral questions, financial concerns after the loss. So very active in casework. We've got a fantastic community care department, which connects survivors to professional counseling if that's what they desire. And also local support groups. We know that the greatest thing that we can do for survivors is to connect them not just with us, but connect them also within their local community to what all the other supports are and social supports are available for them physically where they are. So we try to provide that also through our community care department. We have a very active event staff and programming staff who provides seminars, retreats, and expeditions for survivors where we do a lot of grief work, especially within seminars. We do a lot of grief work, and we meet people where they are and help them to process and find coping skills and to find hope and healing by connecting physically with other survivors. We have retreats where people come together with their same demographic, say all siblings or all parents or something like that, and are able to connect around themes that are common within that particular relationship, losing that relationship. We have expeditions for people who their way of grieving is getting up and being physically active and moving so that their grief can move. And so those are smaller groups, and they go out and they climb mountains and they conquer obstacles because that's the way they grieve. They have a very active online community as well, very active on social media. And so if being online is where your social outlet is and where you find a lot of support, then there's a very active community there and message boards and chat sessions for all types of losses. Also very active. We've got a fantastic Inner Warrior program going now, which is getting people more physically active because we know that when we can physically move, our grief can also move. And so we're trying to make sure that we are tapping into every kind of way that survivors have of coping on a daily basis. There are many other programs that we have as well that involve running and connecting with our Teams for TAPS, which is the department that connects families with major sporting events where they are able to honor their loved one. And then, of course, we've got individual events that are going as well where our survivors are going out and honoring their own loved ones and directing those efforts, whether it's fundraising or just awareness, back to TAPS so that everyone is aware of what we're doing and we can have as much support as possible for these amazing surviving families.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, all the way from, climbing, something that, I probably wouldn't be able to do, to, maybe walks or things like that. It seems like TAPS has taken the military mantra of we're just going to figure out something for that grieving journey to make them feel better or, get their mind off of the bad stuff and focusing on the good stuff. I was looking, just back through history, and you see like World War II and the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, and all the way up to Vietnam. There was the telegram that came, and people learned about it months after it happened that their loved one died or had an incident. And now it seems so fast and so quick, like literally after the minute that person has passed on, there's a team that goes and the casualty officers and notify the next of kin. Can you talk a little bit about how this new technology, new digital age has changed the dynamics of it becoming a more stop in your tracks time instead of, you know, that long telegram wait period? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. You know, that's something that we have to have a lot of consideration for. And I know our military has a very difficult job sometimes of getting that notification out to a family who lives, you know, quite far sometimes from a military installation. And yet news can travel so fast through social media that that very often they're trying to get to the family before the family hears about it on the news. I know that, you know, there are, have been instances where, you know, the kids were at school and news travels fast through those outlets and kids can wind up catching wind of an event. And so, you know, they have to kind of hustle the kids away from, you know, their classmates and kind of get them where they need them to be so they can make that notification maybe to the whole family. You know, it's kind of a different world. I mean, when I was notified of my husband's death, I didn't have to deal with all of the social media and the instant notification through the news outlets. So it's definitely a consideration that the military has to keep in mind as they're doing these notifications. And, you know, they do the very best job they can to try to make sure that they're doing it as sensitively as possible and, you know, getting to the families and doing that physically. It's no longer a, here's your telegram and you know, we wish you all the best and we're sorry for your loss. They really do a very good job of rallying the military support around the family. And thankfully, TAPS is in a position now with a relationship that we have across the military services to be able to partner with them. And the military does a great job of initially, you know, providing that immediate support that's needed and the logistics to help that family. And TAPS is really here as another piece of that to provide support for the casualty branches and those casualty officers that are doing that supporting of the family. And we're here to pick up where they leave off in that long-term care as well. So we really like to think that we work hand in hand very closely with all the military branches.
Well, you must have ESP, because that was my next question of how closely you guys work with the military. That's great to hear that there's that sort of common bond of, you know what, we're going to leave them in a better place, and then you guys are going to leave them in another better place. So that's great. I want to get to the kind of the do's and don'ts. I know people, they hear about somebody, you know, dying and they want to be that one that offers support. And, you know, what are some things that people can do to help that grieving family or that grieving person kind of get through it and not, you know, do a social faux pas, if you will?
You know, it's an interesting question. We have people who come to us regularly who are friends, or, you know, other family members, and they want to be able to provide support to that person, but they're not sure what they can do. It's very easy to, you know, take someone a meal or do something like that. And very often, feeding people, because, you know, grieving people forget to eat. Feeding people is something that's easy to do, but, you know, people are looking for what is something long-term that I can do to help the family. And the truth is, just continuing to be available. Very often what happens when a person is grieving that loss is that in the first few weeks, everyone is there and wants to help. Sometimes that can be quite overwhelming. Sometimes, you know, the best thing you can do is to wait a few weeks and then reach out to that person. Because once everything is kind of quiet, and especially after the funeral and memorial services are done, life for everyone else kind of gets back to business as usual. And survivors are still left, you know, living with that daily quietness of that person's absence. And so, you know, being available in the long term, and it's not, there's nothing you can do per se, but just being there, making yourself available, listening is one of the most important things that you can do. But very often what I tell people is that they aren't responsible for making that person feel better or for taking away that pain. There's nothing that you can say that's going to change that. And so very often people will back up and they'll kind of pull away from the person who's grieving because they feel so uncomfortable that they know there's nothing they can say or do. And so they opt to not do anything at all, when really what the person needs is just a quiet presence of someone, you know, a hug, to put their hands on their shoulder, to just be there in that moment when that person needs somebody to talk to or a shoulder to cry on.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that God gave us two ears and one mouth for a reason. And I think that's just to sit in a couch and just sit there. That's probably sometimes right. The best thing you can do.
Right. You know, one of the things that we espouse in TAPS is the principle of companioning someone. And Dr. Alan Wolfelt is the pioneer of that philosophy. And in essence, it is being present to another person's pain without feeling like you're responsible to help them find their way out. It's being a witness to their life. And you know, one of the most powerful things I've ever heard a family say is a mom who said to me after her only son died, she said, "What hurts the most is that I've lost the witness to my life. I've lost that person who knows all my stories. And now I have to try to find another person who can now be a witness to my life." And really, that kind of explains what TAP is all about. We use our own experience and we become a witness to that person's life. And we also, you know, take the time to hear about that person's past so that they can maintain that connection with their loved one who's passed by sharing those stories. And we are honored to be that witness.
Yeah, that is awesome. It, you know, it's sad, unfortunate that they lose a family member, but it seems like TAPS is just standing there like with the whole organization with a big, you know, the big arms out waiting to give them just a big hug and welcoming them in.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I want to get it a little to the grieving journey. I know that some of the events you have is that, you know, you have these kind of meetups and they have the photo of the person that has passed on. And, you know, my day job is I'm a photographer, and they say that, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words. It seems like that photo pinned onto the person is an immediate connection, and it just starts the story.
Absolutely. That's why we take care for every person who comes to us to have a photo of that person they've lost, whatever photo it is that the survivor wants to share with us. We don't just do lip service to the fact that TAPS is a family. It really is a family. We strive to share our own story when it's appropriate and helps the other person as they're coming to us so that they can know that we relate to where they are. And we want to see the photos and we want to hear the stories, and it is our connection to our loved one. And that's why every time we do a seminar, we at one point in our weekend together, we have a slideshow where everyone brings a photo to share of that loved one. And they all go up on the screen and it's set to music and we all join together and experience that together.
That's awesome. It seems like a very good patriotic tribute, and also a lot of healing can come from it.
Absolutely.
And so going on that, with these connections that are built, I know you've been in the program for, you know, some 20 years or so. I imagine you guys make lifelong friends and you guys are family basically through this program. How has that helped the grieving journey?
Well, you know, anytime you can go through something this powerful and share it with another person, it creates a bond unlike anything you might experience. And I'm sure we've all had those experiences where something, you know, traumatic in our own life has happened, and the people we cling to in that moment are the people who share that experience with us. So, you know, even something like the notification, even though all of the tens of thousands of TAP family members weren't there for me when I received my notification, just by virtue of the fact that they have received their own, that's a traumatic event that we share. So we want to continue on that journey. We want to continue sharing those ups and downs. And we very much talk about it being a roller coaster. We want to be at the top of that roller coaster, and we want to be at the bottom when they're coming out. It comes down to be scary. Doing it alone really is just, you know, for us, but who are working in house, and alone is just not an option. We need to be that kind of support for that family as they're hitting those dark times. And it's inevitable there will be those dark times. We just want to make sure that we are encouraging people as they're going through the dark times that there are times of light and that they will hit those. And I think that it's encouraging for them to be able to see our lives and see that we've experienced our own roller coaster and we have kind of come out of that valley and are experiencing, you know, a revitalization of our lives, hopefully, and that we've been able to create meaning out of that loss, and that we can continue to live again. Doesn't mean that we forget, but that we can take that loss and integrate it into our lives and create something from it is very encouraging for someone else to see when they're in those early dark days where they feel like they'll never be able to live again.
That's very cool. And, you know, I've seen a couple, you know, documentaries about people going through this process and things like that. And, you know, our family, well, my family had a cousin that was killed in Vietnam, and I was recently able to kind of connect the dots on how he gave his life for his country and things like that, and was able to get in contact with some of his old brothers in arms. How do you advise TAPS people that are coming into the program, into that grieving journey, to approach that? I know it can kind of, you know, sometimes it's in war, sometimes it's in a training accident, sometimes it's just in peacetime, and the other mission is suicide. How do you, you know, have TAPS people that are in the grieving journey go about getting information about their loved one that passed on?
You know, it depends on where they are in that journey when they come to us. That's often a very organic process that a person goes through. We sometimes have families who come to us. You know, I've actually had families who have come to us before their loved one has even died, and they are anticipating that death because that person's in the hospital. And we've had families that have come to us decades after the loss. So it really depends on where they are in that process. Sometimes, you know, situations can be quite complicated and information is hard to come by. In other situations, you know, like a training accident, you know, they're still very much connected to the military and investigations that are going on, and that information is still kind of being processed and flowing to that person. And I think it's important for us to be able to just take a deep breath. And it's hard to wait sometimes, especially when you're waiting for answers for about what happened with your military member. It's very hard to wait. But unfortunately, sometimes we have to do that. We have to just, you know, hit pause and let the process play itself out and wait for that information. And the good thing is that they have a place to land as they're waiting. And as sometimes the weeks and months draw out, can become even more difficult. And that's why what we do when we're connecting survivors to other people who've had that type of loss, we take great care to connect them with a peer mentor who is someone who understands that loss. So if it's, for example, someone who died in an aviation crash, we want to make sure that we are connecting that person where at all possible with another survivor who has experienced that same type of thing, because there will be a components of that loss that are most easily understood by someone who's experienced that exact same kind of loss. And so that's why within our peer mentor program, we take great care to match people up with others who have had that experience.
That's very cool, the matching, and, you know, because I know every story is different, but there's that common thread, like you said, like aviation crash, or, you know, there was a combat related death or a training accident, things like that. You know, I want to reflect a little bit about Memorial Day. You know, a lot of people complain, oh, well, it's just about barbecues and, you know, all that. But to me, I don't know if I'm more aware of it or just see it more, but it seems like on social media and even in the news, there's more tributes and legacies that are being shared and kind of a story about a service member that, you know, has passed on. And do you guys, how does TAPS continue the story so that, you know, maybe a civilian that's from the hometown of that person can kind of attach and say, you know what, that was a very noble thing that person did for me and for my country. You know, how can people find out about people in their community that, you know, did the ultimate sacrifice and, or even died, you know, had that kind of thing happen to them?
Well, you know, that's where social media comes in really handy, because very often the information will wind up in the hands of the local community because news travels so quickly. It'll wind up in the hands of the local population even before it winds up coming to, you know, to TAPS. What we do for our part is to make sure that we are providing a space, whether it's at our National Military Survivor Seminar over Memorial Day weekend in D.C., if it's providing that outlet so that we can truly use Memorial Day to memorialize our loved ones and to share their lives and the differences that they've made and set that example truly for our country, so that everyone sees what the true meaning of Memorial Day is, whether it's that or using our Facebook page or using Twitter to really get the message out that this is not just a day to barbecue, but it's a day to look back on the sacrifices of those who lost or gave willingly their lives to the cause of freedom, or the continued sacrifice that their families make every single day in their absence. You know, we very often will talk with survivors who come to us and they'll ask, you know, how can I remember? How can I not forget? Because really, you know, there's a great concern across survivors that I'm going to forget what they smelled like or the sound of their voice. But we help them find ways. We help them brainstorm ways to remember their loved one based on who they knew that person to be. And so, you know, if their loved one was a gardener, why not create a garden and fill it with their flowers and you know, put a plaque, build some type of a statue for them. If they were, you know, a fisherman, how about put on a tournament, fishing tournament, and have it be a memorial tournament for your loved one? There are numerous ways, unending ways, to remember our loved ones and to memorialize them, not just on Memorial Day, but every single day of the year. And we try to model that with TAPS by doing everything that we do every day of the year, culminating in our program over Memorial Day weekend in D.C.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I've met a couple down in Belen, New Mexico, and they were a family that was a karate family. They owned a dojo and they still do. And they do a karate tournament in Captain Tamara Archuleta Long's honor every October. And it's like the talk of the state, the town, and even the karate community. So I like hearing about all those different things that go on to honor these men and women. So, you know, finally, in a previous episode, we had a tomb guard that was, you know, at the Arlington Cemetery, and he's part of an association, and the motto is, soldiers never die until they are forgotten. Tomb guards never forget, even if we can't acknowledge every single person who died in service to our country. So, I totally fitting with the tie-in with that, with TAPS, on how you guys continue that legacy and continue that story and just sum up how TAPS will not quit until, you know, until every story is honored. Is that a fair assessment?
That's absolutely a fair assessment. I mean, you know, like I said before, what we do, what every person on staff does, and overwhelmingly, the overwhelming majority of staff members for TAPS are military survivors, just like me. We are doing what we do because it honors their legacy. And it becomes about so much more than just us and our own loss. That's really what the journey becomes about, I think, that we are getting outside of ourselves and making it about a bigger story, which is the overall sacrifice of our military. We are so honored, not just to remember our loved ones who paid that price and who gave their lives every single day for their military service. We are honored still to remember our military now, and as they're going out and they're fighting for our freedom, we are standing here to support their families. You know, I can't imagine a better job. People very often ask me, how it is that I do what I do. It would exhaust them emotionally, and the truth is, it energizes me because I know I'm making a difference, and I know that there are families out there who need that connection. What better way to honor my husband? What better way for all of our staff to honor all the loved ones that we've lost than to be able to do that? And so we work diligently to connect with people, to do an assessment of all their needs. You know, are their needs emotional? Are they physical? Are they grief related? Are they financial? And we try to make sure that we develop relationships, you know, even outside of TAP, so that we can meet those needs where they are. Because that's what we're all about. We're about honoring the loved ones who have died by continuing to care for the ones they leave behind.
That's awesome. And tell us how people can get involved with TAPS. I know there's some civilians that are listening and some veterans that are listening, and maybe they want to get involved and help. I know that some coin can help, but I also know that boots on the ground, so to speak, can help as well.
Absolutely. We have tens of thousands of volunteers who come out and help us across the country with the various events that we put on, whether it's in D.C. for our national seminar, in Florida for our national military seminar, all the way to California, to Alaska and Hawaii and everywhere in between. We have a ton of volunteers that work with both the adult side of our program and also our youth side of the program with the Good Grief Camp. The best way to get more information about TAPS is truly our website. It's www.taps.org, and it's a fantastic resource. You can learn everything you need to know about survivor programs. You can learn everything you need to know about volunteering. There are links to every possible resource that we've got. And then we have our fantastic helpline, which is 800-959-TAPS. Which is 8277. So we just look forward to connecting with all of our supporters, whether they're, you know, military survivors, former military members, active duty members, civilians. We know that, you know, we are all patriotic Americans who just love this country and want to support our military in every way we can. And there are many, many ways to do that. So, you know, going to the website is a great place to start, and anyone who wants to be a supporter on any of those fronts, we're happy to hear from them.
Yes, listeners, go to taps.org. I promise you it's one of the easier websites you can navigate. Like, there's just, like, it's push buttons, and it has different sections of where you are. If you're a volunteer or you want to start a grieving journey, it's amazing. It's so easy to use. That's my own review of TAPS' website. So finally, Audrey, thank you for joining us. This was a great, great interview to get to know TAPS and you know, have them become part of the Valor Podcast family. So thank you for listening. And you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or you can go to thevalorpodcast.com. Make sure to like us on Facebook, and you can find out how to get involved with veteran issues. Find your mission and don't quit. There are many veterans and veteran organizations needing your help. Till next time, I'm Nick Lehman.